We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins with the 2 minute drill, going around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people, covering the stories where they are happening. We'll start things off in New York City. Scott Seidenberg, NBC Sports Radio, is there. Scott, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. What's going on?
Not Carlos Beltran. First manager ever fired with a perfect, or would it be infinite, record? I don't know. I don't know what it is. What's the reaction to the Mets walking away from Carlos Beltran?
Well, it's absolutely the right move, and the Mets could not afford to deal with this distraction throughout the season. Carlos Beltran was clearly involved in whatever the Astros were doing in 2017. He was the only player that was mentioned in Major League Baseball's investigation, and the only reason why I think that was the case, it was because he was a non-player when the report was released, and Major League Baseball clearly wanted to protect the players that are still playing in the game. Beltran is retired, and at this point, you know, they could name him and implicate him, and so Beltran had to go. And I asked Mets fans this question, because there are a good amount of Mets fans that did not want to see Carlos Beltran let go. But I posed this question to them, and I'll pose it to you as well. If this information came out prior to the Mets hiring him, like if it came out during the interview process, is there any way that he would have gotten the job? He's never managed before. He's never even been a coach before. He goes from playing to then being an assistant with Brian Cashman in the front office with the Yankees. So if this information came out, you found out he was involved in this sign-stealing scandal, would you have given him the job in the first place? And the answer is clearly no. So why does anybody have a problem with letting him go now before he even manages a single game?
Listen, I'm going to continue to say I don't get it. It's okay to try to steal the sign from second base, but you can't put a camera out and say, I don't get it. I really none of this stuff is a big deal to me, but it's obviously a big deal to the industry, to the Major League Baseball. So the dominoes are falling, and there's major fallout from it. If Carlos Beltran came from the Yankees, I mean, don't we assume that part of the reason why everyone thinks he's so sharp is because he knows how to steal signs? I mean, now Jack McDowell is saying that Tony La Russa had cameras and was stealing signs all the way back when he was the White Sox manager. Like, are we going to find out that everybody's doing this, and are we going to fire everybody in the industry?
Well, this is such an interesting turn of events, because you have to think that because of his success with the Houston Astros, like, Beltran and Cora were basically the masterminds of this whole thing, right? So the Astros win the World Series in 2017. Cora goes and takes the job with the Red Sox. The Red Sox win the World Series. Don't you think that maybe the Mets, I know they're playing dumb and they're saying that they didn't know anything, but don't you think maybe they were like, hey, what do the Astros and Red Sox have in common, and how do we bring that here to our organization? And that may be why the Mets hired him in the first place. I'm not saying that that's exactly the case, but you can kind of, you know, connect the dots. And also, how about I'm not sure if you saw the video, but Alex Cora last year in a press conference, I know it's making its way around the internet now,
yep,
when the Red Sox lost to the Yankees, he said the Yankees' best offseason acquisition was Carlos Beltran, and he winked at a reporter. And then he says the Yankees' attention to detail is so much better this year, and he, without being provoked, brings up the word devices and says, I'm not saying that they're using any devices, but their attention to detail is clearly better this year, so we have to get better with our attention to detail. So that press conference was damning for Carlos Beltran, and he was just in the front office with the Yankees. I can only imagine that the Mets were probably hoping he was bringing something to them.
So is anybody asking, were the Yankees stealing signs all last year? Because, I mean, they had injuries everywhere, and they kept winning.
Yes. Well, the Yankees were warned about use of cameras. But there's no report, there's no indication that they were relaying signals to anybody. But they were one of the teams that were warned about placement of cameras. And there was a report that there was something about maybe they have something in the bullpen. Remember, the Red Sox had the Apple Watch in the dugout, and Major League Baseball is trying to get on top of it by saying, hey, you know, use of technology is banned. So there was earlier warnings that were handed out to several teams, and the Yankees were one of those teams that were included in warnings about technology usage.
Why is it banned? I mean, why not? I mean, this is like, you know, banning alcohol when everybody's still drinking. Okay, like, are we just going to at some point be like, listen, this is dumb. You can't stop this. Everybody's, you know, got a phone and a watch, and you know, you're not going to be able to stop it. Is there going to be a time where everybody goes, oh, forget it. Just, you know, videotape whatever you want. Get better with your signals.
Well, I'm with you. I have no problem with stealing signs. I have a problem, though, with the use of technology. I think that it's not fair to gain an advantage over an opponent by utilizing technology to gain that advantage. I think if you have a guy on second base and he's, or a third base coach that can peek in and they're good at reading signs and you can relay that however you want to do it, that's been done since the 40s, even before, you know, there's stories about baseball going back to the 20s and 30s, and this is not a new story. We know this. Bobby Valentine said something the other day in a radio interview here in New York. He said that when he was managing, he used to watch the replays of the games and stay up until like 2:30 in the morning trying to figure out exactly what the signs were that the catchers were giving, and he just couldn't figure it out. Nowadays, all these teams employ these MIT, Harvard grads that are working in the video and analytics department, and they spend hours upon hours upon hours breaking down the video, and they're just better at cracking the code. So people have been trying to do this forever. They're just better at it now.
Yeah. I mean, there's cameras that measure the spin rate in ballparks. I mean,
there is an app. There is an app that you can download that you plug in baseball signs, and it uses an algorithm to decode it. You can plug in, like, if it's 1-2-1-2, and it's a fastball, and then the next pitch is 1-2-1-3, and it's a curveball, and you plug in all that information, the app will spit out what the code is. Yeah. That's how crazy technology has gotten.
Yeah. All right, tell me, Joe Judge, that's the guy that's going to lead the Giants back?
Yeah, and everyone's going to point to his connection with Bill Belichick and then Nick Saban, and gets all the recognition. The one thing that I point to is the success that actually John Harbaugh has had with the Baltimore Ravens. And a lot of people have talked about this. The fact that special teams coaches are involved in all aspects of the team, not just focused in on the offensive game plan or the defensive game plan, that sometimes those guys make the best head coaches. Because in order to be a good head coach, you got to be a good CEO. And you have to know what's going on in your entire organization. So I think that that's what really appealed about Joe Judge to the New York Giants, is it's not so much his focus on one aspect or one side of the football, but his attention to detail and his focus on the entire team and being that CEO and managing an entire team and using that experience that he's had as a special teams coach. Because you also have to be involved in time management discussions. And so I think all of that comes into play.
Well, then they should hire Dave Tobe, the chief special teams coordinator, is the best special teams coordinator in history.
Well, speaking of Kansas City, how does Eric Bieniemy not have a head coaching job? This is baffling.
Yeah,
every single year this guy gets interviewed and he gets passed over.
Yeah, it's trust me, there's a couple of them. And I'm going to tell you, Dave Tobe is the associate head coach, the guy who's had interviews and gets passed over. If the Chiefs win, they'll be the two hottest names next year on the coaching market. All right, tell me about Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets saying that there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Kyrie Irving his mouth seems to get shot off and create problems. Stunning that he's done this again with the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you know, we all knew they were going to have to wait to get Kevin Durant on the court and get him on with Kyrie Irving. Is he going to blow it up before they even get together on the court?
Well, he kind of backtracked on his comments today at practice, and he said, you know, this is what I do. I'm trying to squeeze the most out of the organization, and I talk with my teammates, and they understand what kind of leader I am. He also told the media that if we're not in the locker room and we don't understand it, then we can go bleep off. You know, that's basically what he said. But this is who Kyrie Irving is. This is who the Nets knew that they were signing. They brought him here so that they can get Kevin Durant here as well. And this is, unfortunately, what you're going to have to live with. The next season, we know, is not about this year. It's about next year when Durant is healthy. But if Kyrie Irving continues to not be a disruption but be a distraction, I think it's going to raise some eyebrows. But for this year, I don't think it matters as much. It's all about next season once Durant gets healthy. If it becomes a problem next year, then you have to consider thinking about his future.
All right, Scott Seidenberg in New York. We appreciate it, buddy. Great stuff. Have a great weekend.
Anytime. And you know what? If it ain't this season for the Chiefs, I don't know when it's going to be.
Yeah, it'll be. We're hoping it's this year. But I don't know. I think the future looks fairly bright as long as Patrick Mahomes is there. Scott, appreciate it, buddy.
What's made Milwaukee famous?
This is Brian D., ESPN 94.5 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Brian, how are you, sir?
I am great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. 7.5-point dogs. At San Francisco, we know they lost by 29 in the first matchup of these two teams. Do the odds makers have it right, in your opinion?
I think it's going to be a little closer than that. Now, we talked last week before the Seahawks game. The spread was, I believe, 4.5 going in, and the outcome ended up being 5. So Vegas, as they normally are, was right on with that, and the Packers win over the Seahawks. I think, you know, it's going to be a close game on Sunday in Santa Clara. Definitely not going to be a 37-8 blowout. I just think so much that happened in that first matchup between these two teams in late November was just an anomaly for the Packers. They were 1 of 15 on third down in that game. They had a key turnover on their fourth play of the game. Aaron Rodgers was sacked and fumbled on San Francisco's 2-yard line. They punched it in a play later. It was just a weird football game for the Packers that hasn't looked like anything else they've played so far this season. So I would imagine it's closer than 7. I think we're due for a great game in the fourth quarter on Sunday night, and we're going to see who fares better in that stressful situation. Is it the Niners and their stout defense, or is it Aaron Rodgers trying to get over the hump into the Super Bowl for the second time in his career?
Yeah, Matt LaFleur is just in his first year, so I don't suppose there's a ton of pressure on him. But what about Aaron Rodgers? You know, he talked about being 36 and that he's still got good football left, but no doubt he's closer to the end than the beginning. So he acknowledged the importance when you've got an opportunity like this to get it done. But is anybody around the state of Wisconsin starting to question whether or not Aaron Rodgers is maybe overrated? Maybe Aaron Rodgers is the guy who chokes? I mean, you just heard what I got asked about New York. If it's not this year, when's it ever going to be? Right? That's the mindset about around the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid carries all that with him as well. We hear that time and time again. Every interview I do somewhere else. Is any of that stress and pressure being thrown on Aaron Rodgers?
I don't think so, no. It's been one of those situations in the past where the defense has really been the group that's fallen on its face in some of these NFC Championship games. I mean, you think back to 2016, the Packers played in the NFC title game in Atlanta against the Falcons. That was the year the Patriots had the unbelievable comeback in the Super Bowl. And the Packers got smacked. I think the final score was 44-16. The defense really let them down early in that game. You think back to 2014, it was defense and special teams that let them down late. And even in that double Hail Mary game in the divisional round against Arizona a couple of years ago, Aaron Rodgers didn't get an opportunity to touch the ball in the overtime period when Larry Fitzgerald made that crazy play and then ended up scoring the winning touchdown. Same deal in Seattle in the 2014 NFC Championship game. They lost the coin toss. Russell Wilson throws that long touchdown. Seahawks go to the Super Bowl. So it's hard to put any of that stuff on Aaron Rodgers when he didn't have an opportunity to touch the football late, and it's not necessarily his fault. It's maybe the NFL's overtime rule's fault. The one thing I will say about Aaron Rodgers so far this week, he has been notoriously laid back, and notably laid back so far this week. He's making fun of reporters and press conferences for showing up late. He's wearing UGG boots to the podium. He just seems like he's more relaxed than everybody else, and I think he understands that he needs to act with that type of behavior because other guys on this team have not been in this situation before, and maybe he's hoping that some of that laid-back attitude rubs off on some of his younger, more inexperienced teammates.
Defensively, what do you expect from the Packers? I mean, they didn't get anything going offensively. All the numbers you talked about were about their offense, but do you believe in it? One of them was about their defense, you know, the fact that they had to defend a 2-yard field.
Yeah.
But overall, do you expect a better game plan from them defensively, and where do they stand right now overall with the quality of D?
Yeah, it's going to have to be a better game plan. Where they can really exploit, I think, is with the affectionately dubbed Smith brothers, the Darius and Preston Smith, both of them brought on in free agency. They both had tremendous games against the Seahawks last week. where they can be exploited. It's eerily reminiscent of the Chiefs-Titans game this weekend, Sarin. It's the tight end position. George Kittle, the last time these two teams played, 6 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown. He busted a big one. I just don't know that there's anybody on the Packers' defense that can guard him. And I don't know if it's a Packers problem as much as it is an NFL-wide problem. When you get these dynamic tight ends like George Kittle, Travis Kelce, they're just mismatch problems because you have to decide, do I put a big nickel-type corner? Do I put a safety? Do I put a linebacker that can run? Any answer to that problem is still a problem when you have athletic guys like that. So they need to be able to contain George Kittle. He's going to get his touches. Matt LaFleur said as much earlier this week. They just can't have him popping off four big plays like he did in the first matchup in late November.
All right, Brian D., we'll see how it goes. Brian D. in Milwaukee, we appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend. Enjoy the game.
You too. Thanks, guys.
Going back to Houston, Houston, Houston.
And Adam Wexler, NBC Channel 2 in Houston, is up next. Adam, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
Yeah, not doing great. The Astros. Listen, what's the reaction there? Let's start with, let's take it in order, because I'm interested in the reaction to the penalties that were handed down and then how swiftly the Astros ejected on their general manager. Let's start with the penalties. What was Houston's reaction to that?
I think by now they should have expected it. We've been telling them about this for such a long time, get asked about it almost every day since the articles hit the media a couple months ago, that they were going to get hammered, there were going to be long suspensions, and they were going to hit the manager and the general manager. Major League Baseball had dictated that. And you know, I actually thought there'd probably be more money taken, international pool money, spending money, draft money. And in fact, it was just picks that were taken. But that was the initial reaction. And as we all know, nobody even had a chance to digest that because moments later, and I was actually on the air at the time, the owner stepped to the microphone and said, I'm dismissing A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luno. That was the shock.
And is that an overreaction? You know, the Saints got hit with the suspension of Sean Payton for a year with the Bounty Gate scandal. They did not walk away from him. He continues to be their head coach. They continue to be happy having him as their head coach. Did the owner overreact?
That's a great point that we've been talking about all week. In the Saints situation, there was never any doubt that the ownership, Benson, they totally backed Sean Payton. They had his back. They supported him. I don't think they believed in the punishment. I don't think they believed in the investigation. They accepted their punishments. They went throughout the season, but he had no interest in not having Sean Payton continue. So they just said, well, we'll wait a year and he'll be back in place. And I think through this baseball investigation, especially the way it was written in the 9-page report, absolving the owner of any knowledge of it, even though that seems hard to believe, absolving, you know, the two other gentlemen of their participation in it, and yet they're still suspended. I think he is doing that from a, we have to save face. We have to do this for the public. I think it's not an overreaction because I don't think he wanted to deal with questions about how could you support this because they're still here, things like that. To know about their success, I also think there's an element that this owner believes he can do the things that are already in place because next season he's going to have no team president. He had already made that move. He's hiring a new GM and a new manager. It's on him to make it work. I think he thinks that's fine.
Let's turn to the Texans. Tell me, what was the reaction to this game? I was kind of, surprised. I won't say shocked. Surprised at how quickly the Houston media got on Bill O'Brien. One of the questions even being, why would you tell, what reason could you give Texans fans for believing you're still the right guy to lead this organization? Is it that bad around Bill O'Brien even after this game?
Well, he played 2 playoff games this year, and halfway through the first one, he was fired. He was gone. It was all over. They were down 16-0 to Buffalo. His career in Houston had to end. They had to get rid of him. This is embarrassing. They're getting smoked at home again in the playoffs. And then a quarter of the way through the next game, the totally prepared and exceptionally coached Texans have a 24-0 lead, almost impossible, and yet he still found a way by the end of the game to be in the exact same position. I think I've told you this throughout much of the year. The fan base has zero confidence in the head coach. They're more than ready to see them move on. And, in fact, each year he just keeps getting more and more power. He and Jack Easterby, who came over from the Patriots last offseason, seem to have the ear of everybody in the organization, and nobody's telling them no about anything. It's his organization, and until the owner, who has spoken one time since he took over about where the direction of this franchise needs to go, until he actually says something about why he has faith in this head coach and this regime, it's an impossible question to answer, because we see the results on the field. It's the mistakes that they make. It's the inability to do things on game day 6 years in that are troubling to the fans, and should be, because they're not getting any better, and they prevent you from winning when you're in the postseason. And it's shown each time they've been there.
Adam Wexler in Houston. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You got it.
All the way from San Francisco.
And Roxy Bernstein, 92.5 The Game, A's Radio, ESPN. He's everywhere. He's our buddy, Roxy Bernstein, in the Bay Area. Roxy, how are you, buddy?
Oh, it's a lovely day in the Bay Area, as you'd expect.
Yeah, well, we've got school closings on a freezing rain day. That's what we've got, although it should be better as the day progresses. Hasn't been as bad as maybe they thought it would be, but that can't dampen the mood here. We've got the Chiefs in the conference championship game. What's it like with Niner fans in San Francisco with the Niners getting ready to host the NFC championship game?
So much excitement about this game, because the 49ers are where they've come from the last few years. And the question's really going into this season about John Lynch as the GM and Kyle Shanahan as the coach, and dealing with the injury to Jimmy G last year, and the team struggles, and you end up, you know, with the second overall pick, and Bosa turns out to be a star. And the way things have come together for this team, the emergence of George Kittle and taking that next level. This has been a team that this area has really gravitated toward. And look, with the success the Warriors have had recently, and as lousy as they are this year with all the injuries they're dealing with and the struggles of the Giants, and let's face it, you know, I work for the A's, but the A's don't necessarily register as much as the other teams in the Bay Area. The Niners are always the driving force here in the Bay Area. And you have all the Super Bowl championships, and you're going back to the Montana years and Steve Young. And so this is the team that the Bay Area has always rallied really around, and even though they're down in Santa Clara now. But this area is buzzing with excitement, waiting for Sunday.
All right, what are they going to see? What's the word on health, particularly when it comes to their tight end?
Well, he did practice yesterday, after he did not practice Wednesday, which is obviously a very good sign. He says he's going to be good to go. And I think that bye week helped out the Niners a lot. And yes, they get a little bit dinged up against Minnesota, but I thought for the most part, they were pretty dominant against the Vikings in that game last week. They have extra day to prepare for Green Bay, who they dominated in their regular season matchup. But this team should be pretty much good to go. And I'm not I'd be pretty surprised if there were some other issues that came up for the Niners. But I would expect Kittle. I would expect Dee Ford. I would expect the Niners to be ready to go for Green Bay.
Dee Ford only had 6.5 sacks, but I think maybe one of the more telling things about what he's done for them is the – I think you might even have mentioned this, but I read it again this morning about how all the sacks that Bosa is getting predominantly came with Dee Ford opposite him. He only has 2 sacks when Dee Ford's not on the field with him. What is the word on the impact Dee Ford's had?
Well, he's had a big impact, and you alluded to it right there, because – when you have Ford coming off one side, Bosa off the other, you have Buckner in the middle. What are you going to do? How are you going to protect your quarterback? You have to pick your spot. Are you going to max protect all the time? Because you double team each guy off the edge. But then what do you do about Buckner? So it's really a tough call. And in the first matchup with Green Bay, the Niner defensive line just completely overwhelmed the Packers up front. Now, the Packers were banged up in that game going in, so it didn't help Aaron Rodgers that there wasn't much of an offensive line to begin with in that game. But I would expect the Niners just to pin their ears back and try to make it difficult again for Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, at the same time, I wouldn't get overconfident thinking, all right, that's going to happen again. You're talking about one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen in this game. And the Niners can't just assume that, okay, the same scheme, that they're going to have the same type of free runs to Aaron Rodgers they had last time, because this time is going to be a lot different.
All right, one more on Dee Ford, and that is this. Listen, I know when you're on the edge, you're not going to pile up tackles like middle linebackers or safeties, but he had 6.5 sacks and he had 7.5 other tackles. I mean, does anybody, this according to ESPN's, and tackles, everybody kind of, you can see different numbers depending upon where you look, but is he really as bad against the run there as he was here?
He hasn't been good against it, but at the same time, the Niners really have used him as a pass rush specialist, and they're not looking for him to play the run or get tackles. And okay, he's going to have to play against the run, and the teams are going to try to keep you guessing a little bit and keep you off balance, but he's there to get to the quarterback. That's his job. And so you want to take advantage of a strength. And he's as good, and you know this, Seren, as well as anybody. There is nobody better at coming off the ball and getting to the quarterback with a speed rush than him. So they're trying to utilize that and take advantage of it and put him in situations that he could specialize that skill in. And so if you're worried about against the run, they're not using him in that manner. And Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, has plenty of other guys within the system, getting Quan Alexander back, for example, the way that even Fred Warner has played this year. The Niner defense is a great defense as a unit, and within the unit, just doing your job, and that's what Dee Ford's job is with the 49ers.
All right, last one, Jimmy Garoppolo. He played fine in the last game. He's going up against Aaron Rodgers. There's kind of a rule of thumb. Look at the two quarterbacks. Whoever's better, that team's going to win. Is it that simple? Can Garoppolo play at an Aaron Rodgers level?
I don't think he has to be honest with you. I know that adage, and there's some truth to it. But if the Niners can consistently run the football, which they have been doing, and the defense can be consistent in the way they go about things, then just Garoppolo can't make mistakes. That's the thing. Now, does he have to go nuts and put up 300-plus yards and try to, if that's what Rodgers is going to do? No. But he just can't turn the ball over. You can't put your defense in a bad position. This team is built around its defense. And the offense, yes, they have some ability to put points on the board. And you go back to the New Orleans game, for example. But with Kittle and Sanders and the running game and the three-headed monster running back the Niners have been using, it's really about the defense. And don't put the defense in a bad position. Don't make mistakes where you can hurt the football team. And I think that really is the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo coming in.
Roxy Bernstein in the Bay Area. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, Seren. See ya.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cocks his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Joe Montana has done it again.
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Miles Davis starts the playoffs with a bang. 106 yards. Touchdown, Chiefs.
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific grace, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
Yes, indeed. Turn to our Chiefs insider, Adam Teicher from ESPN.com. He joins us here on our Sprint Guest Line. Adam, brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. The floor model sale is going on right now. Take advantage of it right now. All the ingredients of a fantastic man cave. Just a great basement for you and the family. Not to mention your patio, not to mention your spas, your gorilla basketball goals. Hey, it ain't going to be sleeting forever. Get over to Family Leisure. It's nice and warm inside at K10 and Ridgeview, and you can check out all the great things to do when you are stuck at home, whether it's shuffleboard, poker tables, whether it's the foosball, the video games. So much to love. Theater chairs. They got it all. It's at Family Leisure. Go check them out today at K10 and Ridgeview or online at familyleisure.com. Adam, how are you, my friend?
Good, Seren. How are you doing today?
Doing well, doing well. By the way, I'll mention for anyone who's just getting into their car late, the breaking news of today, the Royals announcing the passing of David Glass. This actually occurred back a week ago yesterday on January 9th, but David Glass passing away, and we'll hear from Dayton Moore at least coming up here in a little bit. Curtis Siebel getting ready to listen in to the teleconference that they're having to announce that. So I'm sorry, Adam, I forgot I wanted to mention that again in case anybody's just getting into their car. But David Glass, rumors that he was ill when he sold the team, the Royals, and Mr. Glass denied that. Whether that was true or not doesn't really matter, but he has now passed, passing a week ago at the age of 84. Adam, let's talk Chiefs football here in the program, and let's talk about Chris Jones. What do you think? Is he got a shot to play, or is this something you know, that is really more of a dream than a reality?
Yeah, my sense is he's not quite there yet, but you know, let's see what happens between now and Sunday. You know, maybe the Chiefs can use him in a limited role where you know, he can get a smaller amount of snaps but still be effective. I just know that you know, watching that workout that he had last week on the field, it was obvious that he wasn't anywhere close to being ready to play then. And not good news that he didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, but maybe a little bit of progress today. So we'll see. But my sense is it's still you know, going to be the Super Bowl for him if the Chiefs make it.
All right. And they've got a big challenge ahead of them. Derrick Henry's got to be stopped. What do you think of the run defense without Chris Jones?
Yeah. I mean, you'd like to have him in there for sure. But, you know, Mike Pennell's done a nice job. Colin Saunders has, you know, had his moments. You know, Derek Nnadi has played better, I think, the last part of the season. So, you know, I think the Chiefs still have the pieces to get it done. I mean, I do. I mean, it's not going to be a shutdown thing. It's not going to be one of those deals where he has, you know, 13 carries for 29 yards or anything like that. But, you know, I think the Chiefs have the personnel to get the job done. I certainly expect them to do better than they did in the last time around.
Who are the key guys, right? I mean, you mentioned on the inside the defensive tackles. Mike Pennell is a guy that really was like a footnote when he was signed, and he's become maybe their most important run defender. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, so I don't know that the Chiefs necessarily lose a whole lot going from Chris Jones to him. At least when you're talking about Tennessee running the ball. Now, as a pass rusher, that's a far different story. And that's where I think the Chiefs will really miss Chris Jones on Sunday. But still, you'd like to have him in there and healthy and playing every down. But if that can't be the case, you know, maybe he can help the Chiefs out as a pass rusher. But with Pennell, the job he's doing, I think the Chiefs you know, can survive in that part of the game without Chris Jones.
Which one of the linebackers do we see? Do we see a lot of Reggie Ragland at outside linebacker?
Hitchens. I mean, I don't know how they do it personnel wise. You know, the Chiefs have kind of gotten away from Ragland a little bit at linebacker. He's been playing more on passing downs and getting after the quarterback. So, you know, I don't know. You know, do they have a spy on Tannehill like they kind of did for Deshaun Watson last week? You know, Tannehill. You know, he had a couple big runs on one of those touchdown drives in the fourth quarter. So, of the last game. So you wonder if how the Chiefs are going to do all this with the X and O's. You know, they have some options. You know, Dorian O'Daniel played a lot as a spy last week. I wouldn't expect that to happen on running downs, of course, but, you know, maybe on passing downs, you see some of O'Daniel again.
What'd you take away from Andy Reid at the podium? I thought he seemed a little, you know, testy that he was having to do the extra media. You know, this one's the NFL mandates it. He doesn't get to dictate the schedule to anybody else. What do you think of Andy Reid? And do you agree with me that he was a little feisty because he had to be up there?
Yeah. I don't think that's, you know, he'll get his digs in, you know, every once in a while. You know, hey, this is not my favorite thing. And, you know, he'd rather not be doing that. And I get that, you know, but that's part of the deal. You know, if you don't want to be doing pressers this time of year, you know, go 5-11, you know, then you won't have to worry about doing pressers in January, you know. So it's just part of the deal. And, you know, some of the guys, you know, they just grin and bear it. And, you know, I think he could probably do a little better job of that. But, you know, hey, I don't blame him for not wanting to do that. It's, you know, takes away from what he'd really rather be doing this time of year.
I asked him on Wednesday about the special teams. I tried to butter him up first by talking about how good they've been for 6 years with special teams, and that Dave Tobe's been maybe the best special teams coach ever. And I said, but it's been a rocky road this year, and they really kind of cost you in that first quarter.
And he immediately said, well, yeah, but we got him back after that. Okay, fine. You still dug a massive hole. Congratulations. I mean, it's one of the great games in Chiefs history, but they were able to dig a hole 24-0 and then come back and win going away. But it's not something you want to practice. Why have the special teams not been up to par compared to what the Chiefs have done in the past?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you, but it was just amazing how, you know, in the past, we just become used to the Chiefs kind of winning every week on special teams. You know, it was kind of a thing you could count on, and really hadn't been the case, as we know, this year. I don't have an answer for you. I really don't. I mean, they were bad in the first quarter on special teams against Houston. Remember the fourth quarter of the game in Tennessee a few weeks ago, how bad they were toward the end of that game on special teams. So, there's been a lot of plays you can point to this year that just aren't working out for the Chiefs on special teams. And it's been more this year than maybe Dave Tobe's first 6 years combined. I mean, it's just been not very good from that aspect.
They wanted to blame the punt block on not altering the snap count. You think it's that simple?
No, I don't. I don't think on the punt block, Barkevious Mingo really jumped the snap. I think he just did a nice job. I don't think the Chiefs put enough of a body on him. He kind of squeezed through that gap in the middle there, and I think it was more of an assignment thing than anything on that one. So, no, I don't think it was a snap count. I think it was more just a breakdown. But if it was a snap count, you know, that's the second time they've had a kick blocked on a snap count. That's a real problem. And they got to figure that out, because you do that this weekend, you know, it could get you beat.
They've had, what, three punts blocked, one field goal, I know for sure. Is it two field goals?
I only remember the one in Tennessee right now as far as blocks.
Okay. And they had any extra points blocked? I know they've missed three or four.
No, no PATs blocked. Yeah, they missed a couple, but not had them blocked.
Well, that's a big part of the equation as to creating problems. And we know in the first game, you know, the special teams were the problem there as well. Missed extra point, muff snap on a field goal, blocked field goal, and then, of course, offensively dropping the ball and turning it over and going the other way. I thought Sammy Watkins said something interesting where basically I called it, you know, a window into the players' souls. When he said, well, as long as Patrick Mahomes is right, you know, we feel good. And I took right to mean like healthy as to how he was saying it, not like, oh, hot or cold, because we haven't really seen cold Patrick Mahomes. He might be off a little. We haven't seen a guy who has a 4 INT day, right? That just hasn't happened yet. Is that where this team is, that their confidence is that no matter what, 15 will bring him back? And is that a sword that cuts both ways? One, you just tend to sit back and say, well, Patrick will win the game for us. Or two, you're motivated to go play because you know you've got the ultimate weapon, and as long as you don't screw things up, he's going to be the guy to win it.
Yeah, I definitely think that belief in Pat Mahomes and what he can do had something to do with that turnaround, that comeback last week. You know, hey, the Chiefs had it, really anybody else at quarterback, it certainly wouldn't happen as quickly as it did. And does it happen at all? Who knows? I mean, you just don't know these things. But I think that belief that, hey, it's only 24 points, and we've scored 24 points in three quarters many times over the last two seasons, I think that has something to do with it. I really do. The Chiefs may have come back anyway with a different quarterback, but I just feel like they never feel like they're out of a game. And, yeah, I do feel like that was a factor on Sunday.
Do the Chiefs need to run the ball to try to keep Derrick Henry off the field?
No, I don't. You don't need to be afraid of what the other team's got going. I don't think the Chiefs need to get involved in that game at all. No. They need to maximize their opportunities. I mean, the Chiefs scored a touchdown on seven straight possessions, and then they kicked a field goal on the eighth. They might not get eight the whole game on Sunday, but you need to worry about doing what you do and scoring points and doing better. You know, they kicked four field goals against the Titans when they were in Nashville a few weeks ago. That's not going to get it done. four field goals would get them beat on Sunday. They need to do better in the red zone. I think red zone is going to be, to me, the key of the game on both sides. If Tennessee is holding the Chiefs to field goals and Tennessee is the number one team themselves in scoring in the red zone, then that's a recipe. That's a path for the Texans or the Titans to win the game on Sunday. So I just feel like the Chiefs need to do what they do on offense, and they'll be fine. But don't have to alter anything because of what's on the other sideline.
Is there pressure on Reed? I mean, beyond just, every coach feels pressure. But does he feel the pressure? Because every station I go on talks about how he can't get it done in the playoffs.
Yeah, you talk about some windows into some souls. I think we've seen that a little bit with you were out there yesterday, I think, when Dave Tobe was talking about how much he wanted a Super Bowl for Andy Reid and how he thought it was important for Reid. And Travis Kelce today almost got a little emotional when he started talking about how much he wanted to get a Super Bowl for Andy Reid. And Pat Mahomes talked about it, and some other guys talked about it. They know how much this means to his legacy, to everything for Andy Reid. And so, I do think there's a lot of pressure on him to get this done. Not hot seat pressure, not like he's going to get fired if they don't win or anything like that. But I do feel like there's pressure on him to get the Chiefs to a Super Bowl. It's been a long time, and everything is – this year has been amazing, Saran, as you know. I mean, the last few weeks alone – Miami beats New England. Tennessee beats Baltimore. The Chiefs are down 24-0 and come back to win. Everything is lining up for them to go to the Super Bowl this year, and it's time for them to take advantage of it, you know?
All right, so how do you think this game plays out? What's your expectation?
Well, I mean, I there's some Chiefs fans who seem to think that this is a foregone conclusion, you know, that Tennessee's just this little country team who has no shot at winning, and they're just like this team that's bringing a slingshot and a rock into Arrowhead Stadium or hoping for that one in a million shot to take out a Goliath. I don't see it that way. I think there are some paths for them to win the game. You know, they went into Baltimore with that great plan the other night and executed it perfectly and controlled the game from start to finish. And if they come in with another smart plan on Sunday and they execute it the way they did that plan, they can compete with the Chiefs and they can win the game. But ultimately, I do think that the Chiefs are the better team, and this is more about the Chiefs than it is about the Texans or the Titans. I just feel like if the Chiefs play their A game, like they did in the final three quarters the other day, there's not much Tennessee can do. Derrick Henry or no Derrick Henry, I think the Chiefs are going to win this game. So to me, it's more on the Chiefs than it is on the Titans. I can see a game that maybe is competitive for a while, close for a while, but I picked the Chiefs to win. 28-17.
All right. Should they defer?
Yes, because they always do. They don't need to change a thing. I know some people said, yeah, they need to change that and they need to take the ball if the game starts. No, don't change a thing. I love the way they've made that work at times this year where they'll score at the end of the first half and then they'll score to start the second half. They did it against Houston the other day. So put your defense on the field. Don't be afraid. That's the one piece of advice I would give to Andy Reid, and I don't think he needs it. I think the Chiefs won't play scared. But don't be afraid of Derrick Henry. Don't be afraid at all. Play your game.
All right, and finally, the weather. We know Patrick Mahomes has played well in just about all types of weather. Does the cold weather? I had some people telling me that, cold weather favors the team that runs the ball. Does the weather end up being something in this?
I don't think so. I think both teams have enough experience in this kind of deal where it's not going to matter one way or the other. Hey, one team might have more trouble than the other catching the ball or something like that, but you can't predict right now which team that's going to be. I just feel like those kinds of things, in the end, are a little bit overrated.
All right, Adam Teicher is with us here in the program. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. I will start you with this, Adam. Hot chicken or barbecue?
A barbecue.
You know what hot chicken is?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan.
I didn't know it was a thing until we talked to folks in Nashville today. But apparently it's a thing.
Yeah, they put a little, I don't know what they do, they put a little hot sauce in their chicken, and it's a thing now, so yeah.
All right. It's
I'm more of a barbecue guy.
All right, it's going to be cold on Sunday. What's the coldest game you ever sat outside for?
Oh, I'm like the first guy to bail on those deals. I've been to some Royals games early in the year when it's been kind of cold. You know, maybe low 40s. I guess the last game I remember that's that cold. So I'll say, believe it or not, baseball.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know you're a Southern California kid, but you did go to school in East Lansing.
Yeah, and I don't remember any real cold weather games, you know, below freezing or anything like that. They used to quit. The Big Ten used to quit. They played their last games like in the middle of November back then. They've adjusted their schedule. Now they go after Thanksgiving, but they never played after Thanksgiving. The Big Ten didn't. So seasons ended a little earlier back then.
All right, you like or dislike the use of Roman numerals for the Super Bowl?
Dislike, because at some point you don't know what the number is, right? I mean,
no.
unless you're a Roman numerologist or something, you don't know. So I would prefer to stick to the old-fashioned, the newfangled numbers.
Yes, yes, yeah, the modern numbers. all right, and finally, who wins, Green Bay or San Francisco?
I like the 49ers. I think they're the better team. I think if the Chiefs can meet the 49ers in the Super Bowl, I think that'll be a great game. So I think the 49ers to win, maybe by, I'll take it by two touchdowns. I'll say 14 points.
All right, Adam Teicher, always appreciate the time, buddy. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, sir. And talk to you later.
All right, Adam Teicher from ESPN. We'll take a break. Talk some more Chiefs football. Also, Kevin Harlan, if his plane lands, scheduled to join us. We're going to hear some from the press conferences today. Also hear from Dayton Moore, teleconference he's having, talking about the passing of former Royals owner David Glass at the age of 84.
The program with Seren Petro.
He's a big hoss, about a 260-pounder.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, our thanks to Adam Teicher joining us there in the program. Everybody likes the Chiefs. Everybody likes the Chiefs, right? A lot of optimism. It's a bright, sunshiny day for Chiefs fans, even though it looks like it's like 8:30 at night in July with the grayness of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody likes the Chiefs.
Seems to be not that many reasons to like the other team.
Titans, people like the Titans. I don't know who else likes the Titans. This is it. Cinderella, man. Midnight. Midnight came about Thursday this week. Time for the Titans go back to their rags. They're 9-17.
Mm-hmm.
Chiefs by two touchdowns, 31-17. We're going to see if we can get Kevin Harlan on the phone. Otherwise, we're going to hear from the press conference from Dayton Moore, as well as the Chiefs players and coaches. It's coming up next here in the program.
The burnt end of the hour question, brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who was the last team to be favored by at least 7 points in a conference championship game and lose? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.